My dear Lord Sukadeva Goswami, although Vritasura was a sinful demon, he showed the prowess of a most exalted Kshatriya and satisfied Lord Indra in battle. How could such a demon be a great devotee of Lord Krishna? These contradictions have caused me great doubt, and they have made me eager to hear this from you. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, after hearing Maharaj Pariksit's very intelligent question, Sukadeva Goswami, the most powerful sage, began answering his disciple with great affection. Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, I shall speak to you the same history I've heard from the mouths of Vyasadeva, Narada, and Deva. Please listen with attention. O King Parikshit, in the province of Sorasena, there was a king named Chitraketu who ruled the entire earth. During his reign, the earth produced all the necessities of life. Therefore, here the most significant statement is that the earth completely produced all the necessities of life during the time of King Chitraketu, as stated in the Upanishad. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota. One should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. Krishna, the Supreme Controller, has created the material world, which is completely perfect and free from scarcity. The Lord supplies the necessities of all living entities. These necessities come from the earth, and thus the earth is the supply, source of supply. When there is a good ruler, that source produces the necessities of life abundantly. However, when there is not such a good ruler, there will be scarcity. This is the significance of the word Kamadu. Elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam it was said, during the reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the clouds showered all water that people needed and the earth produced all the necessities of men in profusion. We have experienced that in some seasons the rain produces abundance, in other seasons there is scarcity. We have no control over the earth's productiveness, for it is naturally under the full control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By his order, the Lord can make the earth produce sufficiently or insufficiently. If a pious king rules the earth according to the Shastra injunctions, there will naturally be regular rainfall and sufficient produce to provide all men. There will be no question of exploitation, for everyone will have enough, and black marketing and other corrupt dealings will then automatically stop. Simply ruling the land cannot solve man's problems unless the leader has courage and capabilities. It must be like Maharaja Yudhisthira, Purusha Maharaja, or Ramchandra, and all the inhabitants of the land will be extremely happy. This Chitraketu had 10 million wives, but although he was capable of producing children, he did not receive a child from any of them by chance. All the wives were barren. Chitraketu, the husband of these millions of wives, was endowed with a beautiful form, magnanimity, and youth. He was born of a high family and a complete education. He was wealthy and opulent. Nevertheless, in spite of being endowed with all these assets, he was full of anxiety because he did not have a son. Whereupon it appears the king first married one wife, but she could not bear a child. Then he married a second and a third, a fourth, and so on, but none of the wives could bear children. In spite of the material assets of Janmaishvarya Sutra Sri, birth in an aristocratic family with full opulence, wealth, education, and beauty, he was very much aggrieved because, in spite of having so many wives, he had no son. Certainly his grief was natural. Grihastha life does not mean having a wife and no children. Chanakya Pandit says, Putrajinam Griha Sunyam. Family man has no son, his home is no better than a desert. The king was certainly most unhappy that he could not get a son, and this is why he had married so many times. Kshatriyas especially are allowed to marry more than one wife, and this king did so. Nonetheless, he had no issue. His queens all have beautiful faces and attractive eyes, yet neither his opulence as his hundreds and thousands of queens, nor the lands in which he was supreme proprietor, were sources of happiness for him. Once upon a time, when a powerful sage named Angira was traveling all over the universe without engagement by his feet, will he came to the palace of King Chitraketu. Chitraketu immediately stood up from his throne and offered him worship. He offered drinking water and edibles, and in this way performed his duty as a host to a great guest. When the Rishi was seated very comfortably, the king, restraining his mind and senses, sat on the ground at the side of the Rishi's feet. O King Parikshit, when Chitraketu, bent low in humility, was seated at the lotus feet of the great sage, the sage congratulated him for his humility and hospitality. The sage addressed him in the following words. So this begins another story talking about King Chitraketu to explain how, though he appeared to be a demon, he was actually a great devotee. So therefore, it starts with his previous life. And here we have a story of his enjoyment that he got as a king. It's described here that he had everything. He had wealth, he had kingdom, he had youth, he had beauty. He had good health, everything. The only thing he didn't have was a son. So he had his 10 million wives, but no son. So this is a big disaster for him. This, of course, is a material calculation. And it goes to illustrate the fact that no matter how much we have in the material world, we can still not be happy. So there was some flaw in his happiness in spite of seeming to have everything. So, of course, sometimes we see that maybe people do have everything, plus they also have a son. But then the son may turn out to be a bad son, so then it's another problem. Or the son may die, or whatever. So there can be all sorts of problems. So in spite of all the happiness or facilities we may get, there's always some sort of imperfection there. So that is why the scriptures warn us that we cannot rely on material happiness as our mainstay or her goal or whatever, because ultimately it fails. So in the case of Chitraketu, due to good karma, it was almost perfect, his happiness, material happiness. In most cases, that's not so, because people have a mixture, and they have a little wealth or a little control, a little property or whatever, and they can enjoy a little bit, but they don't get so much enjoyment as Chitraketu did. But that's all due to one's particular karma. But even if one has very good karma, as in the case of Chitraketu, or as in the case of a devata, like Indra, or like Brahma, even if the karma is very, very good, still there is imperfection. So Chitraketu's life here, there is something imperfect. And then we see Indra's life, something imperfect, because he also gets problems in the previous chapter. He got attacked by the Asura. Brahma, what is his problem? It's almost perfect because it's the highest planet in the universe. So there's no sickness, no old age, and death only comes after the lifetime of Brahma. That is, his 100 years, which is millions and millions of yuga cycles. So his lifespan is very long. Nevertheless, he has to give up his body. He has to give up his house, his planet, his whatever family he has at that time. So there's that imperfection there. We see in the lower planetary systems also there's very great facility for enjoyment. So the demons down there also, the nagas and whatnot, they also enjoy very nicely for 100 years or whatever, and they don't have any problems. But then they have to die eventually also. So in the material world, some people do get a lot of advantages, but still there is some problem because they have a material body. So there's no perfect place for enjoyment. So we may get the enjoyment in one life, but it's not guaranteed we'll get the same enjoyment in the next life. We fall from that position. So that is why in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that you go to Svarga Loka, but after you've exhausted your punyas, then you fall down to the earth again. And then you have to have this mixed happiness and distress. So you get less enjoyment. So the position of ideal happiness in the material world, even on the higher planetary system, is not permanent. You fall from that position after we exhaust our punyas. So this goes to show that the goal of life is not this. Now, normally we have the purushartas, the goals. Artha, dharma, kama. So these are the goals that most people concentrate on. But there is the fourth goal, that is moksha, liberation, getting out of the material world, which a few people will endeavor for. But most people get involved in the other three. Now, of course, moksha is preferable because it is a solution to the temporary nature of the previous three, artha, dharma, and kama. So, it ends the cycle of birth and death, it ends this impermanent happiness or whatever, and one is provided with some eternal happiness. However, it is pointed out in Bhagavatam that the devotees reject this also. So artha, dharma, kama, moksha, all the purusharthas that are normally advertised in the Vedic literature, all these are rejected completely by the devotees of the Lord. They're rejected in the Bhagavatam. So just previously, Parikshit himself has said that it is very rare to be a devotee of the Lord. Among the muktanam, siddhas, and whatever, among all those people, it's rare that we'll get a devotee, so it's one who surrendered under the Supreme Lord. So even one gets liberation, one desires liberation, one gets liberation, still, that is not considered anything. It's much rarer to be a devotee of the Lord. So therefore the Bhagavatam rejects these four goals completely and concentrates simply on being a devotee of the Lord, which in this chapter is called Narayana Prayana, one who surrendered to the Supreme Lord. So that is the called the fifth goal. So one may ask, well, how is that the fifth goal? What do we get out of it? And the other ones, we get artha, we get some material enjoyment, kama, we get material enjoyment, dharma, we get material enjoyment, moksha, we get the bliss of Brahman. So what do we get out of serving the Lord? So yes, one does get bliss, one gets the highest bliss. So as explained in the Bhagavatam, the bliss from serving the Lord is millions of times greater than the bliss of Brahman. And that bliss of Brahman is millions of times greater than the bliss in the material world, like this. So, finally, the bliss of serving the Lord is more. But that's not the purushartha. That's not the goal of the devotee. That is the goal of artha, dharma, and kama, and moksha. That is, somehow we have to be happy. But that is not the goal of the devotee. The goal of the devotee is simply to serve the Lord. And the byproduct is that happiness or bliss. So that bliss is connected to the nature of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is naturally blissful. And therefore, in serving the Lord, the devotee also naturally becomes blissful. So simply the nature of devotional service, that there should be bliss because it is connected to the Supreme Lord. So that is the goal for the devotees. And therefore, all of these efforts for comforts in the material world should be regarded as illusion and obstructions to the development of devotion. So Bhagavatam says, as long as we are attracted to these material things, it creates an obstacle for the progress of bhakti. Because bhakti means we are attracted to the Supreme Lord, which is spiritual. And enjoyment of material means we're attracted to material things, the opposite. So as long as we have the material attraction, that obstructs our progress of bhakti. So therefore we have the tenth apparat, or main materially attached, in spite of hearing all the glories of the Supreme Lord. So if we still are not convinced to give up anything in the material world, then when we practice bhakti, then it's very difficult to practice, because we don't desire to give up anything, so then how is it possible to give it up? So scripture therefore educates us and tells us that how futile the material endeavor is. And therefore we'll have stories like this. Chitraketu's story. Actually, then he finally did get a son. But then the son died. More futility. So, in other words, one should not strive too much for material happiness, because ultimately we get disappointment. So instead of that, why don't we strive for that eternal happiness by serving the Supreme Lord? So the here we get many stories where there is miseries of the material world indicated. In this story here, we have other stories in the whole fifth canto, stories of the miseries of material life discussed. So these are there to discourage the person from endeavoring hard in the material world, because it is a distraction to bhakti. On the other hand, we should not take these stories as simply an attempt to reject the material world, and that's all. If that's all we're trying to do, then it becomes jnana. Reject the material world, then we get liberation. Finished. So no. Because a material attraction is unfavorable for the development of bhakti, therefore, we have to have some sort of detached perspective, that's all. So it is said that the qualification for bhakti is not to be too materially attached. And also not to be too detached. So if we're too detached, then we end up in jnani. We reject everything and go into Brahman. If we're too attached, then we cannot even do bhakti. We stuck in karma yoga. So if we're too much in karma yoga or too much in jnana yoga, that is disqualification. But nevertheless, we do have to have some detachment from material things and not too much attachment. So that is a qualification. But then the other real qualification beyond that is attraction to the Supreme Lord. We should have some attraction for hearing about the Supreme Lord. So, therefore, too much material attraction is a detriment for beginning bhakti. And when we begin bhakti, then the process of bhakti creates detachment. So this means we do not have to practice other means. So in jnana, for instance, we have different practices. One of the practices is vairagya. That means practicing detachment. And so we practice detachment by renouncing different things in the material world. So that is not a particular practice within bhakti. The practice is hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping the Lord, etc. These are the practices. So, on the other hand, we do have some sort of indications of renunciation or whatnot, detachment, that is represented by things like vratas. So therefore we have the vrata of Ekadasi, so there is some vairagya, so to speak, there. But how is it different? Because it's something to please the Lord. So because fasting on Ekadasi pleases the Lord, therefore it is done. Not because we should fast and become detached from food. It's because it's pleasing to the Lord. So Ekadasi is called the day of the Lord. So therefore we incorporate some sort of vairagya within that in terms of fasting. So we have days of vratas like Jamashtami and whatever, Kartik Vrata or whatever. These are all the limits of vairagya for the Vaishnava. It's connected with the Supreme Lord. So similar, Jamashtami is there because it's the glorification of the Supreme Lord. That's sort of the pleasure of the Lord. So, the main elements, however, are, for instance, anapana sirya mas, and what is the main thing? Again, we engage in service to the Lord. So, the service to the Lord itself brings about attraction to the Lord. Attraction to the Lord brings about detachment from material enjoyments. So therefore, detachment automatically is produced with the progress of bhakti. So the more we're attached to the Lord, the less we're attracted to anything in the material world. So that is a judge of progress. We, in two ways, not one, but two ways. The attachment to Krishna and the detachment from material things. Because we can look at a jnani, also he's attached to the material world, but he's not attached to Krishna. So therefore he's not advanced as a devotee. So not just detachment. The detachment is simply a result of the attraction to Krishna. So the more one is absorbed in activities of Krishna, hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping, etc., and that is the positive sign. The negative sign is he's not attached to things in the material world. So the more attachment for Krishna, the less attachment for mind, that is the sign of progress for the devotee, external sign at least. So therefore, the vairagya or detachment is not a separate practice, but it's incorporated within the angas of bhakti in certain ways, like Ekadasi and Jamashtami, etc., vratas. And the process of bhakti itself creates that detachment from anything in the material world. But to understand that attachment is detrimental, therefore, we'll have stories like this. The story of Chitraketu and his absorption in material things, and consequently his lamentation, etc. Just to show us the futility of getting too absorbed in material things. So So this is the perspective we take for these different stories about the hopelessness of material endeavor. Well, you can use things for Krishna, but if we're attached to them, they won't. So yes, we can get things, material things, but if we're too attached, then we won't give it to Krishna. So we have that detachment also, even if we get material things. If we're too attached, then we won't give anything. So then this becomes simply material greed. Well, of course, there is preferential service. That's not a problem. Some people prefer one type of service to the other, so that is there. On the other hand, we find examples of the great devotees. They are absorbed in all sorts of services. Like Ambarish, for instance, he did everything. He engaged his eyes, ears, nose, feet, and hands, and everything as a servant of the Supreme Lord. So ultimately, the devotee just simply tries to engage all of his senses and his mind in Krishna, and he's very satisfied with that. So we should not in any way refuse any service, because it's all engagement for Krishna, it's all pleasing for Krishna, it all helps us advance. But as I said, sometimes there are particular services or angas of bhakti which they may be more attractive or easier for people to do. Well, we cannot say everything is allotted for everybody because it's impossible to own everything. Nobody owns everything in the material world. In which way does everybody own everything? It's impossible for them to do so physically and politically or whatever. Of course they aren't, or legally they aren't either. So it doesn't mean anything to say I own everything in the material world. Oh, of course, out of greed, we can think like that. But the fact is, he'll never get everything. He'll be limited by karma. So when the scripture says that, you know, we have our quota, the quota means karma is going to give you so much enjoyment in this material world, not beyond that. So therefore, a person can try to enjoy it more and more and more, but he can't. He's limited. Is obviously limited by his material body. How is it possible? That he had more than Krishna. The will of the Lord, obviously. Of course, Krishna also, in the spiritual world, he has how many? Well, he had 3 billion gopis in the Rasa Lila on earth, so. And he married them all later on. So. It's only relative. Well, he has special powers also. He even met Lord Shiva. He could travel around anywhere and then see the devatas or whatever. He had very great powers. Devotional service of Krishna is blissful, but while executing, we also experience the sturdiness. This is how we perfect and maintain that bliss. Well, obviously the bliss that we're talking about is the bliss of prema. So that bliss, the prema, is not there in the sadhana bhakti. Of course, we get happiness from bhakti, but we don't get that bliss. That only manifests in bhava and prema. So in prema, it is continuous. In bhava, it is almost continuous. So before that, the happiness we get won't be continuous. There'll be problems due to our impurities and arthas, etc. So that is simply something we have to tolerate. So that's why it's said that one gains the mercy of the Lord if he tolerates everything that happens in this material world, and he looks at his suffering as his karma and the arrangement of the Supreme Lord, his mercy, and he continues his devotional service in spite of that. So therefore, the disturbing elements are there as a reminder that we have to become detached from happiness and distress in the material world. How we do that, of course, is by the engagement in the service of Krishna. This is the solution. So one who continues the process of bhakti in spite of the different disturbances, that is the person who gains the mercy of the Lord. Well, they also were in a circle, and Krishna also manifested 3 billion forms, and they made a big circle, which would probably go around the whole earth. No, they were there, but of course the Vrindavan is a spiritual entity, so therefore it's not limited by material calculations. So what we see as Vrindavan may not be the real Vrindavan. Similarly, Dwarka has so many inhabitants there. But we look at the Dwarka now, it's not that big. So the spiritual dimension does not always correspond to our material dimensions. It's not limited in the same way. Which, this one? Chitra-ketu, that would happen. I don't know what yuga this is. Could be Swayambhuva or later. It doesn't mention here, I don't think. But 7 minutes, another Manvantara. Different Manvantara completely. It's not even Satya Yuga. Much, 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 much before that.
Arantara Sri Sri Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Vishwanath Mahan Maharaj ki. Jivan Desai Sri Bhakti Vrindavan Prabhupada ki. Jai Ho Prabhupada.